Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome and thank you for listening in. My name is Linda Mooney, and this is Other Worlds of Romance on Blog Talk Radio. And all this week, we have been broadcasting live from the Romantic Times Convention in Las Vegas. And tonight is our last night to be at the convention. And I am thrilled to announce that I have for my final guest, Jenna Black. Hi, Jenna. How are you doing?
Doing good. Woohoo!
How are you surviving Romantic Times?
Yeah.
Huh?
I was in a studio what? Audience earlier today. I'm still doing the woohoo thing. Sorry.
That's okay. Jenna's going to be reading from Divine Descendant, which is book 4 of her Nikki Glass series. Now, Divine Descendant is right now available for pre-order. It will not be out until May 16th. So you're getting a treat here because you're going to be getting an excerpt read by the author before the book comes out. So this is going to be a very special evening tonight. If you would like to speak to Jenna after she gets through reading her excerpt, we'd be more than happy to have you call in. The number is 646-727-2932. Or if you've got a question for her, I've got the chat room open. You can come in and pop your question into the little blank there, and I'd be more than happy to pass it along. Or if you're sitting over there on Facebook or on the website and listening in there, email me your question, linda@lindamooney.com, and I'll pass it along. And for those of you who don't know Jenna, she is a graduate from Duke University with a degree in physical anthropology and French. Oh, bonjour, Jenna.
Bonjour.
Once upon a time, she dreamed she would be the next Jane Goodall, camping in the bush, making fascinating discoveries about primate behavior. And then, during her senior year at Duke, she did some actual research in the field, and her fascinating discovery was this. Primates spend most of their time doing such exciting things as eating and sleeping. Well, concluding that this discovery was her life's work in the field of primatology, she then moved on to such varied pastimes as grooming dogs and writing technical documentation. Wow. Talk about two diverse fields there, Jenna. She is now a full-time writer. Oh, okay. She is now a full-time writer of fantasy, romance, and young adult fiction. You can find her website at Jenna Black, that's JennaBlack.com, and trust me, she's got a wealth of fantasy and paranormal that you're just going to want to just bury your nose into right now. Well, okay, so Jenna, my question is for you. I'm looking at The Divine Descendant, where you have a private investigator who's become an immortal goddess, pretty much so. And I'm going to ask you a really obvious question. Where are you getting your ideas? Because this is completely, this is really out of left field. And I'm looking at your other stuff too, like your Morgan Kingsley series with who's a kick-ass exorcist and all this and that. So, you know, the usual stuff that you would expect, you don't have. So that puts you in a very unique situation. But where did you get the idea of Nikki Glass?
Well, it started out, and it's hard to know exactly where the idea came from because they kind of just pop up out of nowhere. But sort of the germ of the idea was somebody who was immortal but whose immortality could be stolen. So it's kind of like immortal with a really big caveat. And I was a real fan of mythology, so I came up with a mythological explanation for why this would happen and how it would happen. And so I think this is a way to write about immortal characters and have them still be vulnerable because their immortality can be stolen.
Okay. Hey, how about that? No. So if she is a descendant from of Artemis, and so is that mean she's a one of her parents is a descendant, or did she know she was a descendant?
No, she had no idea. She has no idea these descendants even exist until she accidentally steals somebody's immortality. Because anybody who's descended from any of the original... Excuse me?
She stole it? She stole it?
Well, yes, accidentally. Cause,
okay.
How you steal things accidentally? Basically, the ancient gods had children with mortals, and then the ancient gods left the world, and they made all of their children immortal. Except there's this one caveat, which is any of their descendants can steal their immortality by killing them. So that was kind of my explanation for why so many myths have, parents killing their children and vice versa. They're like, oh, well, if, you could steal somebody's immortality by killing them, then, there might be a little bit of tension between the generations. So,
well, definitely,
So Nikki is many, 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 many generations removed and has no idea who she is. And then there's another immortal descendant who decides to basically commit suicide by jumping in front of her car. And so she kills him and therefore accidentally steals his immortality. But, it was not something she knew anything about, and so she suddenly plunged into this world she knows nothing about.
Goodness gracious. So
yes,
these people that she accidentally kills because they basically are sacrificing themselves, suicide. But is it one of those things where they were just tired of living and the only way that they could die is by their own hand? Because if they're immortal...
The only way that they could die is by finding another descendant to take their immortality. So,
how neat.
Yeah.
How neat.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to turn the floor over to you, but I will go ahead and read the blurb for you since you don't have it on hand right there. And I'm going to go ahead and read it for you, and then I'll let you take it over. Okay. Divine Descendant is the name of the book. It's book 4. And what happens when fertility goddesses go on strike? Oh, nothing much, except maybe the end of the human race. When private investigator Nikki Glass became immortal as a descendant of Artemis, she never dreamed she'd find herself playing marriage counselor to the gods. But she doesn't really have much of a choice when the crazed ex-wife of Anderson Cain, a god in disguise who just happens to be the son of a fury, decides to enact revenge by wiping out all of humanity. Somehow Nikki must convince the two to kiss and make up, but with Anderson now gone AWOL, she'll have to find him first. And to top it all off, the cat's out of the bag that Anderson killed Constantine, the Olympians' deposed leader. Now their new boss, Constantine's son, is out for blood. With every mere mortal fate now resting in Nikki's hands, how can she outsmart the gods? Or will she be doomed to spend the rest of eternity in a barren and desolate world? All right, real quick, who is Constantine's son?
The Olympians are a rival band of Liberi, which is what I call these descendants of the gods. And they're the real bad guys. And Constantine was the king of the bad guys, and he is now deceased at the end of the previous book. And his son is a much more charming, sweet-seeming guy who really is pretty rotten at heart also. And so he is now taken over the Olympians and is not happy about his father's demise.
I would think so. I would think so. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Okay, I'm going to, sorry. I'm turning the floor over to you, Jenna, and so you can read us our excerpt. So take it away.
All right. Well, I'm going to read something from relatively close to the beginning of the story. And throughout the series so far, Nikki has been having a relationship with Jamal, who is the son or the descendant of Kali, the Hindu goddess of death. And they've had a very troubled relationship. Jamal is a very troubled individual who has a massive temper problem and is in possession of this death magic that wants to be used. And he's always trying to control it and keep from killing people. And it's made for some very unfortunate circumstances that have put a lot of strain on their relationship. But recently, Nikki sort of helped him find a way to channel this death magic by creating a phantom tiger that is sort of the embodiment of his magic, which seems like a great thing. His temper is much better controlled now. He doesn't fly off the handle so much. The problem is that Sita hates Nikki's guts. Sita is the tiger. Hates her really bad and is very jealous of any interaction Jamal has with other people. So Nikki and Jamal are in Bermuda about to go engage in a fight with one of these goddesses who's misbehaving. And she realizes Jamal is going to have to use Sita in the battle, and she's not sure that Sita is not just going to kill her instead. So she's trying to figure out how to calm things down before the battle. So that's what this scene is.
Okay.
And they're going down to the beach at night, and she's bracing herself to have this conversation with Jamal.
Okay.
I reached up and touched the side of his face, eyes locked with his. I wanted to go up on tiptoe and kiss him, but the difficult conversation had to come first. He might not want to kiss me afterward, but that was a risk I had to take. Still cupping his cheek, I took a deep breath and then waded in. We need to talk about Sita, I said. I guess he heard something ominous in my tone, because his hands dropped from my shoulders, and he took a small step backward, enough so my hand could no longer reach his cheek. What is there to talk about? I need to know that if we go in there tomorrow, she's going to attack the bad guys instead of attacking me. Jamal put on an offended look, but it was clear from the expression in his eyes that he was worried too. She's not stupid. She'll know who the real threat is. But will she care? Jamal started to respond, but I cut him off. I think she and I need to make peace with each other, and I think we need to do it now. His eyes went comically wide. Please tell me you're not suggesting what I think you're suggesting. I'm suggesting that you summon Sita now so she and I can have a little heart-to-heart before we potentially go into battle tomorrow. He took another step backward, like he was prepared to bolt. You're crazy. That's the dumbest idea I've ever heard from you, and that's saying a lot. I reminded myself that he was feeling cornered, and that I probably shouldn't take anything he said personally. Yeah, letting her out tomorrow in the heat of battle when all our lives depend on it, and we don't know if she can be trusted, is a much smarter idea, I countered. If you can't keep her under control tonight, when you can put your full concentration on her, then she and I can't both go tomorrow. We have to try, I told him in a soothing voice. She can't do me any permanent harm if it turns out you can't control her, and I promise I won't hold it against you if that happens. I rested my case on those words, knowing that I needed to give Jamal a little time and space to think it over. I would be the one in physical danger if Jamal lost control of Sita, but it would do some serious damage to his psyche if I got hurt. He had always been ashamed of his inability to control his temper and his death magic, each of which fueled the other in a sometimes unbearable feedback loop. Losing control of Sita would mean he hadn't improved as much as he wanted to think, and that would hurt like hell. But sometimes we have to swallow unpalatable truth, and this is one of those times. Stuffing his hands into his pockets, Jamal walked away from the water and plopped down onto the dry sand. "This is such a bad idea," I heard him mutter under his breath, and I realized I'd won the argument. Hooray for me. Now that I'd gotten my way, adrenaline began to rush through my veins and my breathing shallowed. All well and good to build a logical argument for why we needed to do this, but that didn't mean the prospect didn't scare the bejesus out of me. I'd seen Sita in action before, and if she didn't feel inclined to listen to my rational argument, this could get very ugly, very fast. I moved a little farther away from Jamal, closer to the water's edge. I didn't know if the water would discourage a real tiger, much less a phantom one with human or near-human intelligence. But if she came after me, I figured I'd dive in and find out. The edge of a wave lapped against my bare heel, and it was all I could do not to jump and yelp at the sudden cold. Diving in would not be fun, and I hoped like hell it wouldn't be necessary. Sitting cross-legged on the sand, Jamal closed his eyes. It used to take considerable time and effort for him to summon Sita, but the process was getting faster. 500 pounds of surly tiger appeared on the sand beside him before I felt even remotely prepared to face her. Sita greeted me in the usual way, with a tooth-bearing snarl that made my bones rattle. Her eyes fixed on me with unnerving intensity, and she lowered herself into a crouch as she began stalking toward me. Jamal opened his eyes and reached out to touch her. Reached out to her, touching her flank. "Let her be, Jamal," I said. Inside, I was practically gibbering with terror, very aware that I was prey in the presence of an apex predator. But I think I sounded relatively calm. She and I have to work things out between ourselves. I don't know whether Jamal did as I asked and let her be, or if Sita just chose to ignore him. But she kept stalking closer, ready to pounce at a moment's notice. My pulse pounded in my throat, and it took a hell of a lot of willpower to stop myself from backing away. I held my ground and met Sita's eyes, hoping she wouldn't take that as some kind of challenge. "I'm not your enemy, Sita," I told the tiger. "You and I both love Jamal." Internally, I winced at hearing myself use the L word. I hadn't intended to, but now was not the time to act embarrassed and equivocate. "I want what's best for him, and I hope that's what you want, too." Sita snarled again and kept coming toward me. This time, I couldn't stop myself from taking a step back, even though it put me within reach of the chilly waves. A little cold water was the least of my problems. "You're hurting him," I said. Sita didn't appreciate that, and her snarl turned into a mini roar. "I know you don't mean to," I hastened to continue, "but you are anyway. Humans need contact with other humans, and Jamal has been isolated for so long. You've helped him so much with managing the death magic. Because of you, he can finally have real friends without worrying that he's going to lose control and hurt them. I hope phantom tigers like flattery as much as most humans do. But the problem is you won't let him. He's not afraid his own temper is going to be dangerous anymore, but he has to worry about what you'll do, and that's just as bad." Sita was still moving toward me, but I was mildly encouraged by the fact that she hadn't attacked me yet. She could cross an enormous distance with a single bound, so I was already well within her kill zone. Either she was listening to me, or she was playing with me. I took another couple of steps backward, just to give myself a little more space. I now had water up to my ankles and had to fight for balance as the sand shifted beneath my feet. But at least Sita didn't speed up her approach. "You know him," I told her, "better than anyone else. Think about how he would feel if you hurt someone he cared about. Do you really want to put him through that? Sita paused and narrowed her eyes at me. Her tail twitched, and she showed me her teeth again. We both want what's best for him, I said. And this time I was determined not to back away any farther. There's going to be a fight tomorrow, and he's going to need both of us there to keep him safe. Jamal probably would have bristled at the suggestion that he needed our protection, but my slow retreat toward the water had put enough space between us that he probably couldn't hear me over the waves. Either that or he was giving me one of those looks that kill, but I wasn't about to take my eyes off Sita to check. Sita started forward again, and I dug my toes into the sand to keep from retreating. Please, Sita, I said, let's work together. Jamal deserves so much better than what he's gotten from life. I was being consciously manipulative, and yet my own words made my throat tighten and my eyes burn. Jamal had suffered so, so much over his life, and though he wouldn't appreciate anything that resembled pity, I hoped he could at least tolerate some sympathy. Aside from practical matters, I wanted this for Jamal, wanted him to have Sita and still be able to have relationships with other people, to be loved. Sita was close now, and a wave lapped at her front paws. She looked down at them with a soft snarl, lifting and shaking first one, then the other. I fought a sudden urge to giggle. She started toward me again, and another wave wet her paws. Once again, she flicked the water off before taking another step, and another. Step, flick, step, flick, step, flick. I had to suck my cheeks in to keep from laughing. It's hard to look dainty and menacing at the same time, even for a quarter-ton tiger. I swallowed past laughter and fear and took my life into my own hands. How about if I come to you, since you don't like the water? Peter froze in mid-flick. I'm not much of an expert in reading feline facial expressions, but I interpreted the way she looked at me then as total shock. There was no question that she understood what I'd just said. Gathering my courage, I took a cautious step closer to Sita. Her lips twitched into a warning snarl, but I ignored it and took a second step. She finally put both her paws down, now ignoring the water that lapped at them. Behind her, I could faintly see the man-shaped shadow that was Jamal, and I could almost imagine him holding his breath. I was ashamed to feel the quivering in my knees as I continued to approach, one careful step at a time. Sita wasn't leaping to attack me, but the narrowed eyes, bared teeth, and twitching tail didn't look all that welcoming. Maybe I was just shivering because I'd been walking in the cold ocean water, and not because I was quivering in fear. Yeah, that was it. Can we make peace? I asked her softly as I took a final step, one that put me solidly within reach of her dishpan-sized hand. She looked at me up at me and made eye contact. Her sudden snarl caught me by surprise, and I made an embarrassing bleeding sound as she lunged. She moved so fast that I had no warning, couldn't even take a step backward. The top of her head made solid contact with the center of my stomach, knocking the wind out of me while not actually hurting me. However, the blow was easily hard enough to push me off my feet, and I landed on my butt in the water. Sita did the lift flick thing with each of her front paws, sending sprays of water right into my face, then turned around and sauntered back onto the beach, where Jamal awaited her. And that's the end of the excerpt.
Oh, wow. I would probably turn tail and run like hell.
that's the smart thing to do. There's several times when Nikki does not turn tail to run when she really should.
When she really should. But that's not your typical tiger either. That's highly intelligent. We have a couple of questions here for you, and then I'm going to ask my question that I have. But Melinda wants to know, how would you rate your books, PG, PG-13, or R?
Assuming she means specifically the Descendant books.
I'm assuming that's, yeah, what she's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty much PG-13 until you get to this one where there's definitely an R scene. So
okay.
Yeah, Nikki and Jamal keep trying to have relations, but doesn't seem to work too well. And so maybe in this book things might go a little better. Maybe.
Okay.
No
okay.
Spoilers.
All right. Okay. Great. Okay. And then Pacey, if I'm saying your name wrong, Pacey, I'm sorry. Are your books available as audiobooks? Oh, good question.
The Descendant series, the first three books are definitely available in audio. This one, I'm not sure. I have not heard that they're going to do audio with it, and I haven't had a great deal of luck getting answers about that, so I don't actually know.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice if they would be, because the first three, the narrator is Sophie Eastlake, who does a wonderful job on the first three. So I
mm-hmm.
hope it'll happen, but I can't be sure on the fourth one.
And for those of you who are listening in, let me let you know that book one is called Dark Descendant. Book two is Deadly Descendant. Number three is Rogue Descendant. And, of course, this one is Divine Descendant. How many books, I mean, are you? Is this a planned series? You know how many you're going to be? Or is this one where it's like, well, when the next idea comes, they'll be the next book?
This is Divine Descendant is meant to be the end of the series.
Oh.
It was brought to my
attention. Plus, there's a little novella.
My copy edit. Huh?
Plus, you have that small novella.
Yes, there is also a novella that takes place between books two and three.
Mm-hmm.
This is meant to be the end of the series. However, my copy editor did point out that I might have left room for more afterward. That is not in the plan right now, but, you know, maybe if people are really enthusiastic about it, I might consider doing more. But this
Ooh.
Is supposed to be the end.
And now that you've got this one out and this is the end of this series, what are you working on now?
Well, right now, last week, my first hardcover YA just came out. That's Nightstruck, which is a YA horror. So right now,
mm-hmm.
the next thing on my plate is to work on edits to the sequel to Nightstruck.
Now, is that the picture of... Is that the one that has the picture of the manhole cover with teeth?
Yes. Yeah, yes, that is
my favorite. My gosh.
Yeah, the city of Philadelphia transformed into this nightmarish, I don't even know what to call it. Things in the city come alive, like manhole covers, and the streetlights turning into gallows, and all kinds of really nasty things come out at night. And then everything goes back to normal in the daytime.
Oh, my gosh. You're imagination woman.
I know. Sometimes it's a scary place to be, especially when I was doing Nightstruck and looking at pictures of Philadelphia and trying to figure out how can I make this into, you know, something horrible, like the gallows streetlights and things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's your young adult, adult book too.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Young adult book where I had the question to my editor: is it okay if I decapitate a nice little old lady in a young adult novel? She's like, sure, that's fine.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
What a conversation you will often have with your editor.
Oh yeah. My goodness. Well, Jenna, it has been a delight to have you on the show tonight, and I was listening to that tiger, and like I said, I could just feel Nikki's heart just pounding, you know, because that thing keeps getting closer and closer and closer, and then you had it flicking the water off the paws. Oh yeah, really, really hard to look menacing when you're trying not to get your feet wet. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
But readers, I suggest you go and you get Divine Descendant. While you're at it, go ahead and get the first three books of the series and Pros and Cons, which is the little short novella that's also available. But go ahead and pre-order Divine Descendant, and then you can catch up on with the first three before it comes out. And that'll be out on May 16th. And Jenna, thank you again for coming on the show. And it's been a great week, and you're just a perfect way to end my week. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for having
yes.
me.
Yes. And I'd like you to come back when you have something else really off the cuff that you want to show on the show. So, but yeah, I'd love to have you back anytime, and just let me know. You know where I live, so I look forward
all
to
right.
talking to you again. All right, and you have
you.
A great time at Romantic Times. Have a safe trip home too.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. My name is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance. Thanks for listening in tonight. Have a great rest of the week and a weekend, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye, everybody. And we're done.
Yay!
Yay! That was fun.
And my voice lasted the whole time. I was worried
oh, yes.
that my voice wasn't going to last after being at RT and talking constantly, but it did.
It did, and you did great. You did, I'm glad that one girl whoever it was asked about your books and audio, because you have the kind of book that would make great audiobooks.
The narrator on the first three did such a great job. I really hope they do the fourth one, but I'm kind of what I didn't say on the show is that I'm not really having a great relationship with the publisher right now, so I'm not sure what's going on with it.
it's hard to get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you came on the show, and I'm delighted. And maybe next year at Atlanta we can do this again, but this time I can do it from the actual hotel room.
That would
make it interesting. Yes, it would.
Yeah.
It would. All right. Well, you take care. And like I said, I hope to hear from you again. Have a safe trip home. And I hope you sell lots and lots of books. Is the book signing tomorrow?
Thank you. Excuse me? Yeah. Oh, the book signing tomorrow?
The book signing tomorrow?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Okay. Here's to selling a lot or selling out.
That would be nice. I will cheer.
All righty, you take care. We'll talk to you later. Good night, Jenna. Thanks again.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.